there, McLaurin. This is Nick, and I'm here with Peter once again for another episode of Alrighty Then. So I was thinking about how to explain this as we are seeking to advertise this podcast a little bit more. And really, when I was thinking about this, I realized this is kind of like our drive home or our sort of rehash of Sunday. You guys know when you go and watch a movie and you go in the car with whoever you're watching and you kind of just talk about either how crappy the movie was or how good it was and why you liked it. I think that's kind of our hope and desire around Alrighty Then. It's not an opportunity for us to just re-preach at you, but more to take it from a different angle. Perhaps some of the same perspectives, just more through application and more personal. I think that's a really cool thing is it goes really from the monologue of Sunday to the dialogue of Wednesday.
When you were talking about that, I was totally nodding and just thinking, you know, how does what we talk about on Sunday really affect us? Like when I say us, Nick and myself, and, you know, how do we actually grow through, you know, the Word of God? And so that's kind of like, I think, the thrust of Alrighty Then.
And I think, too, one thing is I really have a passion and a vision here at McLaurin that we would be more vulnerable. And I think that the only way that we can do that is to model that ourselves, Peter. And this is also a safe way to do that where you guys can kind of listen to this and we're going to put ourselves on the line. It's safe for us. It's a little bit anonymous as you listen to it. But really, we want to encourage you that this is something that we struggle with. These are things that we work through. And we're not just these scholars up front, but really people going through the very things we're talking about.
And it's funny that you mention it on this podcast because this last Sunday was really all about fear. And, you know, I know you usually ask the question, how did you come up with the ideas you came up with?
Right.
And you probably noticed on Sunday, I didn't have any, overhead slides and things like that. That was because about halfway through the sermon, halfway through the week, that summary verse 24, where God says, I'm with you, like, do not be afraid, for I am with you. It just kind of resonated and just looked back at Isaac's life and just thought, man, that's my life. And all of a sudden the sermon took a different route. And really that's kind of the world that I live in.
I really enjoyed this sermon. Well, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but I was really, there was a chord that was rung in my heart. And I have to say, Peter, this is probably one of the most talked about sermons since I've been here, and not in a negative way. It seems that there's a lot of people I've been interacting with through either Alpha or just in my own time have been saying, well, when Peter said on Sunday, and I think that the reason for that really is this relatability of fear. Of course, you delivered it in a very good way, but I think one of the biggest reasons why people are talking about it is because this is such a huge thing, and especially in our economic downturn of this last year. And I don't know why, but it seems that fear is such a huge thing in our hearts.
And yet, that's, you know, I think, you know, it really is. You know, when I said that this is the most common command that God gives us, it just really resonates in the sense that God knows the world we live in and our lives. That fear is real. There are real fears, and there are also fears that are less legitimate, like I had mentioned in the sermon. And we all have those. And it's crazy, the experts say this, how much we allow fear, or not allow, fear just does dominate the way we do things, what we do, and what we think, and how often we think about things. And I think, you know, that was what touched a lot of people, because that is the world we live. And I had a young lady come up to me and say something very similar and said, you know, wow, you know, it was just nice to hear that I wasn't alone in the fact that, you know, so often I don't do things because of fear. And I think fear grows when we don't talk about it, when we don't face those fears. So I think maybe, you know, rather than rehashing the sermon, when we were just kind of, you know, thinking about it before we actually pressed the record button, we were saying, you know, maybe we should actually look at some of the ways we have journeyed through fears. Because at the end of the day, that's how we grow.
Yeah, and it's uncomfortable, but it's something that it's ironic because we all have that truth in our life. We all respond to fear in some ways. It is primal. It is simple. And unfortunately, I've really found, Peter, especially in this last year in my life, that the simplest truths are the ones hardest to reconcile.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I'd really like to get into this idea of fear. Well, I don't know if I'd really like to get into this idea of fear.
There's a little bit of fear around that.
But I think that we should. And I'll be honest, guys, a big reason I'm doing this is because I'm behind a computer screen and I don't have to face you guys as you listen. Because I'll be honest, one of my prime fears is a fear of appearance. It's a fear of how I am perceived by others. Part of this comes from my personality. If you guys know what like a Myers-Briggs test, it's a personality test. My personality is the protagonist. And so it's someone that seeks to inspire, someone that seeks to lead others. And the biggest weakness, and this really resonates in me, is a fear of people and a fear of how they are perceived. And so, Peter, that's been a huge struggle. We can certainly get into that later. But for me, it's definitely just, I think that I have put man in God's place, if that makes sense. And often I've put myself in God's place, as if what Jesus did on the cross wasn't good enough to give me an identity. I somehow make myself greater than God because he can't cover that identity. He's not big enough to give me a full security or whatever. And I'll go on with some examples a little later. But Peter, what about you? What is like a theme of fear that you found in your life?
I think it's very similar, but I think it comes from more, my perspective is fear of failure. It's actually a performance thing for me. You know, I love progress. I love things that succeed. I love things that work. Maybe that's the reason why I love being an engineer, right? Like everything kind of comes together and you can put the pieces together and I like building. I like seeing things. And I think some of it comes out of, as you said, you know, your background. My parents were very much, you know, affirmation came when things succeeded. You know, if I came home with an A, all of a sudden I was a better son, really sadly. And if I came home with a C, it was like, well, what happened?
So was this like verbally communicated as directly as like, you have failed me as a son? Or was this all perceived from your part? Like how much of that was communicated to you?
I think it was pretty explicit, and you laugh. Thank you. We're trying to be vulnerable here.
I laughed more because out of understanding than because I'm making fun of you.
You know, for those of you who don't know, I have three siblings. There's four of us, four kids. And when I said it was more explicit, it wasn't like you're a failure, you're a whatever, but it was without a doubt. You know, the kids who... my siblings, the ones who had higher grades, got privileges and were looked upon more favorably, and not just looked upon, but spoken of more favorably. Like, why can't you be more like Nick? He's like a smart guy. He's at the top of his class. He does this, this, and this, and you're just going to be, you're a failure.
So you would say that there was like a comparison trap some ways.
Without a doubt. And that was kind of the lingo of I think sometimes the Chinese community too, right? I remember going to some of the relatives' houses, and the parents would pretty much put kids on pedestals. You know, this kid is doing this, and this kid is doing this. And sometimes I think our parents would come home and just like, oh, I wish I could put you guys on pedestals or something like this. Or, you know, let me give you an example of how that came about. One of the biggest fights I had with my dad was the day I said I was going to go into the engineering field. And up until that point, engineering field was, I guess, you know, one step above, you know, blue collar work, day labor. They were not really, you know, if you had a son who could make it, you wanted them to be a doctor or a lawyer or a business person. Engineering was just not there. And that was one of the greatest fights I've had with my dad. And then the ironic thing is that about 6 or 7 years later, the technology field kind of got a little boost in status. And all of a sudden, he's bragging to his buddies that his son's an engineer. And I'm rolling my eyes thinking, like, really? Give me a break.
That's so interesting how the comparison trap. Like, I think that although this isn't like a prime thing in my life, I can relate to that in some ways. Just this of like, what are you going to be and what have you. And I have this one cousin who I love very much. Her name is Sam. And it was kind of like no one was going to be as good as Sam because like Sam right now, she's my age and she's a doctor. And she was always at like top of her class. But it was the same thing, and I was just I was always thinking, I'm like
always in the shadow.
Oh my goodness! Like Sammy just does everything, and she was an athlete and whatever. So I can understand that for sure. How did that play out in your life then?
It played out in all sorts of havoc, right? Like there was performance anxieties. I think I've told some of you. It's crazy. In university, when I was going through engineering, at the beginning of every semester, there would be a day, maybe 2 days, where I would look at the syllabus of the courses that I was taking and look at it, and I would just freak out, have like this little almost anxiety attack, going, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this, I'm going to fail this course. And I graduated with like a 3.9 something average. I graduated at the top of my class. Like, how can that be logical? And yet there's that fear, almost unsubstantiated. And that's one of those examples that I give about, you know, in the past. But today I still have that. I still kind of walk through some of those sort of things. I think one of the fears is, you know, when we listen to podcasts and you listen to other preachers and you're like, wow, they preach amazing. It's like, oh man. And then the pressure, the fear of man, kind of like, I need to be that more. What about you, Nick? You mentioned yours. Like, how, like maybe you can tell us a little bit more. I kind of been talking more than I should. Tell us a little bit more about how you have worked through and some of those fears that have kind of crept up in your life.
So I think a lot of it rooted from childhood. Similar things, I think, that I saw immediately, like what kind of people were accepted, what they looked like, what they acted like. I also knew that my life wasn't normal. I don't know if anyone's life is, but I knew that my life wasn't normal, and my interactions with my mother weren't normal. Her substance abuse wasn't normal, and so immediately I knew that I had to change if I wanted to be perceived a certain way. And so I think that was a fear of nakedness, almost like a fear of people actually seeing what was behind the veil in my life. And of course, I grew up in a town with a teacher as a mother in a town of 1,000. So although I'm not a pastor's kid, I have similar experiences because everyone knew my business, everyone knew my mom, all that kind of stuff. And so it was this idea of you're a teacher's kid, you have to act, you have to be a certain way. And so as opposed to performance, mine was about appearance. Yes. And I think that one drives
very
the
similar,
other.
Right?
And yeah, it's just a slight shift. And so this continued on. And in high school, I was bullied quite a bit. And then it was interesting that in about grade 11 and 12, it kind of shifted and I found some friends and it seemed like everyone kind of stopped bullying me. And a large part of that was because I had shifted my appearance, how I looked, what I was listening to, and also what I liked became cool, which was such an interesting thing. And even now, like a lot of the stuff that I listen to and like and whatever, it seems like comics and board games, it seems cool, but I've liked it since they weren't. Like, that sounded really hipster, but I liked it more since I was bullied for it. There was things at one point that I was just picked on for liking that. And now that shifted, and it's actually kind of confusing when that when that happens to you.
And I just totally tracking with that. It's almost like what I said about my dad kind of flipping from one to the other. It's like all of a sudden it's accepted.
Well, and then you start to realize, A, how liquid cool is, and B, how finicky.
Yeah, fickle.
Absolutely, and that's going to change. And then really it's this meaningless bar that if you try and chase it, what I've found, I don't know about you, Peter, but what I've found when I've saw these expectations is not just fear, but exhaustion.
Oh, wow.
And just this sense of feeling so tired of trying to be something that I'm not, because there's a lot of energy. If you're trying to be something that you're not, you're constantly putting energy in something that you aren't.
And I found that on top of being weary, you never are fully accepted, because what you're projecting isn't who you are.
No.
Right? And so you never, it's like this double whammy. You will never get the approval and acceptance that you want, because what they accept, with this fear and your performance, is that they accept the appearance that you have portrayed. They don't accept you.
No. And I think that for me, just kind of as we're talking about, so how did you come to a conclusion with that? I mean, I haven't. I'll be very honest with you guys. It's something that I very much struggle with. And my number one struggle of being a pastor, it has been appearance. And what you guys think of me, how I'm showing myself, et cetera. And even sometimes to the detriment of my own spiritual life, in the sense of, as opposed to actually seeking Christ, I seek Christ, quotation marks, in invisible ways, or ways that you guys see me, and the realities I'm starting to recognize that. And this will sound rude to you guys, and I love you guys very much, but you guys will never accept me. Peter, you'll never accept me. The world will never accept me in the way that Christ will.
Absolutely.
And then I'm starting to realize, so what's the point? If I'm never going to be good enough for the world, and the reality is that I'm not, then perhaps maybe I just seek God and hope that hope in him. I just thinking when you're talking about John the Baptist, he just said, he didn't ask how to get out. He didn't ask to be rescued. He said, Jesus, are you the one? Because if you're the one, then I'll put my identity in that.
Yes. And I think there's that freeing part, so easy to say it. And I'll say it again, right? All of a sudden, if we put our identity in God, we're freed from needing the approval of others to actually able to love them, rather than just requiring something. Because the more we require from somebody, then the more we set up relationships of manipulation. I'm going to do such and such so that you will approve me. Well, I grew up that way, right? I'm going to excel in school so that my dad will be proud of me. And so, in essence, that's not an authentic relationship. It's one of manipulation.
Well, it absolutely is. And the thing about it is, you're saying how you got a 3.9. And I think I got similar grades in college, but I think that because the reason I did was similar because I was afraid of failure because of the appearance of it, right?
Yes.
And so there's two ways to motivate someone. You put a carrot in front of them or a tiger behind them, right? and so it's either it seems like you either do well because you're manipulated in a positive, in a very loose sense of the word positive, or manipulated in a negative way. And what I found, Peter, and what I kind of want to talk about as we kind of enter into the twilight of this podcast is, something I find is that I start doing this to other people. So I start expecting that, for example, I'll just give you a very personal example. With my wife, I expect that, okay, this is the appearance that you need to be, right? I mean, I use
we project Ali, it to others.
Yeah, and I use Ali as an example because she's the one closest to me, but I know I've done this to my friends, to my parents, and whatever, like this is how you need to appear. And I especially do that in my darker moments. Mm. But I start realizing that this cycle is not like something that I'm a victim of all of a sudden, but then something that I'm actually
perpetuating.
And I'm the one who is the, almost like I'm trying to be God in that way. Like, you need to look the way I want you to look, or appear the way I want you to look, as if I control this little universe.
And so how have you figured a way through that? How have you kind of continued to grow in that?
I think really the only way, specifically in my marriage, is communication. And really, I find that the closer I am to Christ is the only time that I'm going to be, I think of the verse, create me, O God, a right spirit and a contrite heart. Only when I'm close to God and His desires do I have a malleable and learnable heart. Because I find if someone points this out to me, it's only really if I'm in a relationship with God that I'm formable, like silly putty. Like you can actually, not in the sense that I sway to whatever direction, but that I'm malleable. And so I find that that's my really only way through it, is hopefully that I'm humble enough and that God has worked in me that, so that when someone speaks that truth, that because I've been walking alongside God, that I can recognize truth,
yeah,
kind of thing. And just a lot of prayer life. Peter, have you found that you've kind of perpetuated that cycle as well?
Oh, without a doubt. I think it's so easy when you're fearing what others think, then you perpetuate that by putting expectations on others as well. And I think, you know, very similarly, kids and my spouse, Tara, those are usually the easiest ones. But I've done it at church too, right? Like I want the church to look a certain way. I want the church to be, you know, doing certain things. And I'm like, oh, why do I want that? Is that actually for the glory of God? Or is it because somehow I want the church to be more successful than it actually is? And that's really scary.
And I think what else is scary is that sometimes it's a mixture of both. Like we think sometimes, well, I'm doing it either for my glory or for God's glory. We can actually like 80% be doing it for God's glory, but then there's a little sliver of us that's pulling, okay, well, now this is my kingdom. God, you can have everything in this kingdom, but give me this house. Yes. You know what I mean? And I think that it's not always as black and white. And that's why it's so important to, I don't know, just really grasp on with all you can to Christ, because he's the one who will still be able to use us in the midst of that.
And I think one of the things that I have come, that I've grown in, and probably in the last few years, maybe that's the reason why I preach this sermon, is that actually fear is my friend. Just like how Jesus unpacked it. It actually points to places where we are broken and that we have put too much value in, or that somehow we shouldn't be the way we should be, and it's driving too much of what we do. And I have kind of come to, you know, almost what Thomas Merton says in a different way, is like, you know, embrace the darkness. It's to actually sometimes embrace our fears, because it actually points us to God. And that, when you talked about the humbleness, that's where I'm leading. You know, don't despise the fact that somehow things don't work out. Realize that those are actually God calling us. God calling us and showing us some of the things that are broken in our lives, and that we have kind of our priorities mixed up, and that he's showing us the actual unpeace that we have in our hearts that we try to hide, because he wants us to have real peace.
And I think that fear is an indicator as much as pain is. Like, it's, pain isn't something, like I'm talking about physical pain, that's not something that you want to be going and doing, like self-inflicted. Like, that's unhealthy. But healthy pain, if you fall and you hurt your hand and there's pain, there's that indicator something is wrong. Yes. And so although fear isn't something that you want to perpetuate and go deeper in, it is something that you want to be able to just be honest and recognize that.
Absolutely. I think our time is starting to kind of run to an end. Nick, is there anything else that you feel like we should actually address before we call our quits?
And I think really it's just an openness. If you guys are at a point where you are afraid, and I almost guarantee that there's something in your life, I really, I encourage you to invite you to be able to talk to us, or come to
talk to a small group.
Yeah, small group,
your spouse, your friends,
or just someone. You are not alone. Isolation and fear are not good things, but fear,
they accentuate each other.
Yeah, whereas fear and communication and visibility actually can be a good thing, and that's really the only way. So we would love to journey with you as a church in whatever way that we can.
Absolutely, I think we can talk about this ongoing. There's like more than just that fear, but absolutely. So, blessings, McLaurin. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming and being with us in our ready time.
We'll see you Sunday.
Blessings.